Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Listen up because this is Colombo Chronicles Live right here for you every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. with very special guests. And they're from around the United States mostly. They're authors and experts and coaches and people who can give you information on what's happening in the world, the Constitution and romance and child abuse and divorce. And we could go on and on. They are experts in all different fields, and sometimes they're international. So when they're visiting, that's a great, great treat for us to talk to people who are experts and authors from other countries as well. I hope you're having a great day. We always need to make it a great day. We need to shut out some of the negativity in the world because there's lots of it. And we need to meditate a little, calm our minds, and think of positive things so we can have a better day. And if you like, which I do every morning, is open up the door and breathe in fresh air and exhale carbon monoxide. And that is so important, especially for people who are wearing these masks long term, never taking them off, as some leaders suggest, that you wear them inside your house, inside your car, even if you're alone, walking alone, no one's on the sidewalk, etc. It is very important to keep your cells healthy because they require fresh oxygen supplies and exhalation of carbon monoxide as God intended for us to do 24/7. If he had intended us to wear a mask, he would have not given us a nose and a mouth to breathe in the breath of light. And he instructed that and gave us the example and the clue in the Bible when he said that he breathed in fresh air and oxygen into Adam's body and Eve's body, which gave them life. And he called it the breath of life. So there's your clue. There's your hint. And for other human beings, especially doctors, to tell you that you must wear a mask 24/7, and they know that it causes physical, emotional, and even can cause death by causing, for example, through the Dental Association and their information, which you can look up online, can cause very bad breath. It can cause gum disease, and you can lose all your teeth, and it can cause, gum disease can cause death. So go outside and breathe in that fresh oxygen into your body. Hold it for 5 seconds, then release it back into the universe. And while you're breathe in positive thoughts and exhale negative thoughts from your body. And know that God is helping you to stay healthy because when you breathe in that oxygen, it's keeping your cells alive. It's keeping your lungs, your liver, your heart, your brain, all your organs, and it causes you to think more clearly, as well as it keeps your immune system healthy. And we need a healthy immune system to remain healthy and live long lives. So on that note, let's take a break, because I'm going to invite you with my very special guest, Erwin Zucker, a longtime public relations who knows everyone in the business, and he is the guy to go to. And he's going to invite you to a very special holiday event. So stay tuned and don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right, and be sure to bring your appetite to the Horseshoe Cafe, because you will be so happy you did. The food is homemade, and they have fantastic, fantastic desserts. They're all made right there fresh just for you. And now we're coming back to the world of authors and experts on Columbo Chronicles with a very special founder of the Book Publicists of Southern California, who has some really important information that'll make you happy, because holidays are upon us, and he's going to tell you about a very special holiday event and invite you to that very special holiday event. And before we get started, I don't know if you visit, if you celebrate Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Happy Holidays. I personally celebrate Christmas, and so do millions around the world. It is a tradition, of course, and it is a very, very special time of the year. And so some people are trying to take away our traditions. It's very, very important that we stand up and protect those traditions. And we got a technical problem here. Our guest, Erwin Zucker, is having a technical problem. Hopefully he can reconnect with us in a minute. And here he is. And let me tell you, here is Erwin. Okay. Hi, Erwin.
Thank you for that wonderful eulogy. I appreciate the eulogy. Okay.
Yeah. You're so welcome. And so, Erwin, tell the people who you are so they know what and why they should come to this very special happy holiday event.
Well, I love to get familiar with myself, too. I like to know who I am. I'm 94 years young, and I've been most of those years in the public relations field, starting with a record company in New York. Then I became a book publicist, and I've been busy for more than 60 years promoting books and authors, mostly putting authors on radio shows such as yours. TV shows and print media, magazines, newspapers, anything to bring a book alive, and that's what I do. And I am the founder of an organization called the Book Publicists of Southern California, which was founded in 1995. And now this year we're celebrating our 27th annual Irwin Awards, which are named after me, Irwin, I-R-W-I-N. And it's an acronym that stands for industry recognition for writers in the news, I-R-W-I-N. And it's been going on for the last 27 years. And we've given out over 300 awards because we like to pay respects to authors in their respective categories, whatever it might be. So, you know a lot about it, Rose. You won an Irwin Award twice, right?
I won an Irwin Award in a very prestigious, and it was a wonderful event, and all the publicists and authors and everyone who attended, it was so wonderful. And yes, it was for Fight Back Legal Abuse, and that was in 2011 that I won that award. And I think I'm only one of two people who's won a second award for Obamacare, Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals for Political Satire, and that was about 2013.
Boy.
Yeah, wow. So I was very happy to win those and have the appreciation of the of the authors and experts who attended that event.
Yeah, okay, you had that, Rose. Three strikes and you're out. You have two strikes already. Now, the Irwin Award, I believe when it was created, several members of the organization wanted to honor me somehow for my 18 years as president of the Book Publishers of Southern California, because I said, well, this is my last year. We got to turn it over to somebody else. Over the last 18 years of the organization, nobody else wanted the job. They knew it was going to be a lot of work, and it was. And it's still a lot of work for me, although Bruce Braunstein is the acting president. He is the president. I'm helping him a lot. So the thing is that they formed the Irwin Award industry recognition for writers in the news, different categories. And to me, I told the board that was selecting the winners every year, let's give it to an author who is really working hard. It's sort of like a pat on the back to keep going with it. Now, how do you feel about it's a sort of a pat on the back, Rose?
Well, I think it's more than a pat on the back. I think it encourages authors because we have so many different members who are psychiatrists, psychologists, doctors, scientists, teachers, housewives, from all different walks of life who have something to offer to the world. And they have taken their time and their effort and their knowledge to actually sit down and put it on paper and bring it to the book club for review. I think it's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. What we want to do is to keep encouraging authors to keep promoting their book, their books, whatever they have, and just keep it alive. Get on as many radio talk shows such as this one. Keep it going. Get on television. Get hooked up with a magazine or a newspaper for an interview, and just keep it going. That's the whole purpose of the Irwin Award. And we've given out over the last 26 years, this is our 27th year, we've given out 300 awards. Now, this year we're giving out 14 awards. You know, we've got full 14 awards. Last year we had 18 or so. When we started this thing, we had about 10 or 11. Well, we keep going. It fluctuates year by year, and it just keeps going. And we have great enthusiasm with our authors. So we're very pleased to give out this special Irwin Award. In fact, right after this interview, I'm going to pick up the awards in West Los Angeles and bring them home. And tomorrow night, Thursday night, which is December 9th, we're having our 27th annual Irwin Award. It's a Zoom event this year, as has been the last several years, not several years, last 4 or 5 years, we've had Zoom awards for the bi-monthly meetings of the Book Publishers of Southern California. We've had no other choice but to do it that way, so we do it. And we get along with people pretty well. It's working out very, very well. And the general public is invited to be with us at this Irwin Awards. Well, it's actually, it's really a holiday mixer. That's what it really is. It's a holiday mixer. We feature the Irwin Awards, industry recognition for writers in the news, named after me, Irwin Zucker. And I keep going with it. I'm very happy with it because the people who've gotten the awards really deserve it. I mean, this year we got, as I say, 14 Irwin Award winners. Over the last 26 years, we've had 300 winners. And we have winners, Rose, from all over the world. We have a winner from Germany, a winner from Australia, a couple of winners from New York City. Most are based here in Southern California, but it keeps going, and they love the award so much. It's the first time a lot of them have ever received an award. So they take it with a lot of pride, really. And I'm sure, Rose, when you got your two awards, you enjoyed it. Are they glistening in your kitchen or your living room? Where have you placed your awards?
I put them in my office on the bookcase, and all the rest of the awards I've received, thank God. I'm very humbled to have received so many awards, but my favorite, of course, are the Irwin Awards because of the hard work that goes into writing a book. And so those are really very precious to me.
My late wife was an author, wrote about 7 or 8 books. My twin daughters, Judy and Shari, all of whom have won Irwin Awards. I don't know how they got them, but they won Irwin Awards, and they were very proud of it. And I think that's what you are. You're very proud of your two Irwin Awards, and we'll see if you get a third one. You're not getting in this year because the everything is in right now, and we've got the awards in different categories. You know, like we got Best Children's Book Series. We've got for the best book of poetry. We've got the best humor book. We've got a category for best romantic novella. We've got a category for best how-to book. In fact, there are two authors on that. So we've got 14 different categories for 14 winners, and they're very, very proud of it. We put a lot of effort into selecting the right people. So it's going to be a great event tomorrow night. It's a Zoom event. Rose, have you viewed many Zoom events?
I haven't, and I've used a few, and I'm trying to figure out some other information on Zoom. So I've been taking their workshops, and I think they're cool. I like them.
Well, maybe you can view the Zoom award tomorrow night. You know, I'll give out a certain number for the general public that they can view the Irwin Awards. In fact, I think I can give it out in a few moments. Do you mind if I give it out now so we don't forget?
No, please. Waiting for that.
Okay, they want to view the Zoom meeting tomorrow night. It's on only from 6:30 until 8:30. You dial 1-669-900-9128. will repeat it at the end of this interview. I'll repeat it right now anyhow. 1-669-900-9128. And you'll meet the 14 authors who've won Irwin Awards this year. And we've got other things on the program. We celebrate Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, any other holidays that we know of that affect the reading public. It's a lot of fun. And we hope many of your listeners will be tuning in tomorrow night. But it's only tomorrow night from 6:30 until 8:30.
Hello? Hello? Uh-oh, we had a glitch. Maybe we'll get Irwin back in a minute. But also, there's latest news on what's happening in the book business. And there appears to be the resumption in April in the weekend of it doesn't give the date, but it's going to be in April on a weekend in Los Angeles. The LA Times Book Festival will have a booth. The Book Publishers of Southern California will have a booth at USC. And so that's very exciting. You get to meet the authors, you can buy their books, and it's huge. And so you really don't want to miss that. I'll try to find out the dates from Irwin Zucker, our great PR guy and president of the Book Publishers of Southern California for 18 years. And of course he has a new president, and but he's still involved and still helping because it's a huge, huge job to put all these events together. We used to meet at the Sportsman's Lodge, which is a landmark in Sherman Oaks. It's a landmark hotel and restaurant. But I understand since COVID that the restaurant has been sold. So once it gets back on, and running to normal again, I guess we'll end up going and finding a new restaurant. Hello, Irwin, are you there? Hello.
No, this
Irwin?
Is somebody else. I called them because of the show, supposed to be conservative, current events. So I called them to find out what you're offering.
Well, right now we have a guest, and we're going to be talking about the current events in just a minute. But right now we have a guest. But thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Hi, Irwin.
Yeah, Rosa, we've had some technical problems with my three different phones that I have at my desk, believe it or not. Must be something in the air that knocks us out of the box. I don't know what it is. That's why I sort of closed the interview. But if you have any other questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, I was just telling the audience that coming up is the yearly LA Times Book Festival sometime in April, and you will have a booth there, right, for the Southern California Book Publishers to present our books and meet the people who attend.
Well, it's a very helpful organization. It really helps people with new ideas. One of the main purposes of the Book Publishers of Southern California is to help authors sell books. I mean, every author wants to sell books. By the way, this pandemic that we've had almost the last 2 years, which I call a marathon, believe me, it's helped the book industry. A lot of people in the solitude of their home, they were closed in, couldn't get to work, and so they turned to their writing, and while they're home late at night alone, they were writing books, and books were selling, and even some new bookstores opened up all over the United States. You know, so
yes,
we,
I noticed
that's the book industry.
Yeah, well, also I was reading that more people are reading books because they've been stuck at home so much and just for entertainment and relaxation.
Anyhow,
they have been reading.
By the way, I'm writing a book. I don't know if I told you that I've got a great title. I don't believe that titles are really necessary at the beginning of rewriting, but I've worked with almost 4,000 authors promoting 4,000 authors in almost 65 years of book publicity, book promotion. And the title of the book, Rose, I don't know if I ever told you, is Greats and Ingrates, and You're In It. So it deals with famous people that I've worked with, like Jean-Jacques Gabor and so many others, stories about them. And if they've died, I can write as much as I want about them, good or bad. But I don't like to write anything bad about authors. But sometimes authors do things that irritate me, and it's not fair to the general public. Basically, I love authors, not only because my wife was an author, but my three daughters are authors. And people like you, Rose, have a great love for the book industry, and you've helped so many of us to get that extra publicity that we need. We need plus publicity. And it's not easy getting publicity these days. You've really got to work at it. You've got to contact as many radio shows as possible, as many TV shows, as many magazines, newspapers, book editors. You've got to keep going full blast to get that extra publicity that is needed for a best-selling book. Have you noticed that?
Well, the thing is that there's like, you know, millions of books published every year, like 2 million or 3 million or something like that, published every single year. So the competition is stiff, and nobody's going to go looking for you or your book unless you put yourself out there and the name out there consistently, right?
Right. Well, it takes a lot of consistency to promote a book and to do it well. And we've actually have a good tip for most authors when they're interviewed on shows such as yours, Rose, not to give away the full story of the book. Just tease them enough so that they'll go out and buy the book. There are some authors, they get on talk shows and they reveal the whole story of the book, the plot and everything, and I don't think that's wise. You've got to sell books.
I think
amazing.
The important thing is to give them, like you said, the steak. I mean, not the steak, but give them the sizzle, and not the steak.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important for them to tell them what the characters are and the main, the theme, and give them some information about why they should read the book, so it entices them to want to find the book online or go to a bookstore and buy it. And because if
buy
you don't
it. By
the
way,
people...
Rose, you talk about promoting books. I heard something funny the other day. Some people said, you know, women who are pregnant, during their pregnancy, they should start reading to their children. Reading books while pregnant. I don't know whether you ever did it while you were pregnant.
No.
Did you read books?
No.
But I thought it was rather funny when they
said, too tired.
Hey, tell pregnant women. Well, I think the gist of it was that the parents have to teach the kids how to read, even when the kids are just a few months old, even if the books are just hanging next to the child, you know. But when kids start comprehending at the age of 2 or 3 or 4 or maybe earlier, read something to your kid, and the children want it. They love the sound of a book, which I like to say, you know. So what sort of books are you going for these days, Rose? What sort of books do you like, fiction or nonfiction or what?
I like both. It depends on what I'm looking for, what kind of information, or if I just want to relax. Or I read a really good thriller, and I couldn't put it down. And and so it just all depends. Sometimes it's humor. You know, sometimes you just don't want to watch television or sit online and watch a video. You just want to relax out in the backyard and read a good book. Or something that makes you happy rather
well,
than...
What is your next book going to be on, and is it already out?
No, I'm relaunching Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals about political depopulation.
Oh, that's good.
Political satire on depopulation and the redistribution of wealth. So it'll be updated in 2022. It's coming out soon. But that isn't my key book. My my book that I'm actually working on is my memoirs of how I became a crusader for justice.
Well, I'd like to tell your audience, I had the pleasure of promoting maybe your first, the second book. How many years ago was that? About 15 years ago?
It was in 2011.
I enjoyed working on the book. I made an unknown out of it. Well, it wasn't. I'm just joking. But the thing is
no.
You're such a delight to work with. You know, you're a press agent's dream, because actually you're very fortunate. You've been on both sides of the microphone. You've been asking the questions, and you've been answering the questions when you go on other shows or TV shows, or you're doing a book signing at a local bookstore and you've got to talk to the audience. You're surrounded by books all the time. Are your daughters interested in writing books?
My one daughter, Holly, she likes to write, but she hasn't written a book, but she does like to write. She's a painter and an artist, and she does beautiful, beautiful inspirational quotes from herself.
Well, what sort of books do they like?
They like inspirational books and self-help books, and because she's a photographer and she's always looking for professionals for more information and tips and studying and things like that.
Rose, I'd like to remind your audience again about tomorrow night, which is the 9th of December, 6:30, event for the Book Publicists of Southern California. We're going to divulge a lot of interesting stories, and we hope the 14 Irwin Award winners will get a few words. If they're available, naturally, we might have a problem with the author who's in Australia and the author who's in Germany, or the author who's fast asleep in a certain part of the United States or the world. But we'll get most of the 14 authors to just say a few words about their book and why they're so happy. I hope they're happy to get an Irwin Award. Now, the word Irwin, again, is an acronym for Industry Recognition for Writers in the News. It was named after me, Irwin Zucker, for my founding of the organization, and the first 18 years, believe it or not, Rose, I was president for 18 years, and nobody wanted, you know, they thought it was going to be too difficult, and actually they would have been right. To do something good takes a lot of work, even in your profession, as a writer, as a broadcaster. It takes a lot of work to be abreast of everything, to know what's happening in the news, in the world of books, and your audience is expecting the unexpected. They're expecting a lot of surprises. They were expecting a lot of humor. They were expecting a lot of entertainment. And Rose, you do a terrific job with authors. On every one of your shows, you pay a certain amount of minutes to authors. And I think it's wonderful that you do that. Will you keep up the good work?
I will keep up the good work, and I know you have an appointment, and so I'm going to.
Yes, I have
so
I have to get to a place to pick up the awards, and I've
right.
got other things I've got to do today and a busy schedule. I do appreciate all the time that you've given me personally, Irwin Zucker, and to the Book Publicists of Southern California. I'll sign off with the phone number. Anybody who wants to attend by phone in the comfort of their home, they just sit back and relax, and they dial 1-669-900-9128. Again, that's 669-900-9128. 9128. And Rose, thanks a million for the time. I appreciate it very, very much.
Well, we appreciate you, and thank you, Erwin Zucker, and you have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow night on Zoom. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you.
All righty. And don't forget, the passcode is 583275 when you dial in at 1-669-900-9128 and meet the authors that you will be excited to see and listen to their latest, their Erwin Award-winning books on this holiday event. And so it doesn't matter which holiday you celebrate, come and celebrate with the authors online on Zoom. And now we're going to enter into the world of politics. So I'll be back right after this important message, so don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. We're back on Columbo Chronicles Live, and we're about to enter into the world of politics and find out what is happening in today's world, because everything is moving very quickly in a bad direction, and we're trying to get it back to the right direction. So let's see what is going on here. I found this to be extremely interesting, the Gateway Pundit, and they wrote, I have been incarcerated for nearly 8 years for crimes I did not commit. Courageous January 6th political prisoner Jessica Watkins speaks out against the regime. Now, I'm interested in this particular story because I am the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, and I've been on the front lines for 30 years as a consumer advocate for justice, recognized by the media and called as a crusader for justice. And I propose laws in California and internationally that were implemented by legislators, lawmakers. And, of course, laws apparently are intended to break. So even if you do your due diligence and you correct injustices and you are successful at getting your lawmakers to implement them, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to uphold them or follow them or enact them. And there are 20 to 25% of the population who are incarcerated and are 100% innocent. But what happens in the system is that it is what I call justice for sale. And if you don't have, there's three tiers. If you are wealthy, which is the smaller percentage of Americans, then you pretty much can buy justice. You can afford to buy justice because justice is for sale. Justice is a business. Justice is in the mind of the beholder. What I see is maybe a just decision, you may not see as a just decision. So this is why people have so many different opinions on justice, especially since now they try people in on television and on social media around the world. So when the media says this person is guilty, some talk show host, or like they did with Justice Kavanaugh, when they had no witnesses, it was a 35-year-old case. It was based on an accusation by a woman who had no witnesses, who didn't remember where the location was, who didn't remember anything other than rolling off a bed with a couple of young people, so she said, and then running away. So the Democrats, including Vice President Kamala Harris, who was then a senator, stated that he was guilty. All of the Democrats stated he was guilty. They had turned a, they had actually turned on a judge. They had actually turned a employment interview into a trial. They were actually trying him when he was just supposed to be interviewed by them. There's a huge difference here. And they had already determined he was guilty and that all women who accuse a man of sexual abuse is guilty, unless the guy is a Democrat. So, but if he's on the right side, he's a conservative Republican, GOP, or someone they dislike, perhaps, they are automatically guilty. Now, if he had been on trial, he'd be sitting in a jail cell right now. But this is why we have our three-tier justice system, because justice is for sale. And even before the person has been provided due process of law, because of the media many times, they've already decided the person was guilty. And then, of course, that doesn't help because it taints the opinion of the jurors, because everybody watches TV and social media. So people can say, I am not biased, but you have to have some bias if you did watch the news, read the newspapers, or watch social media on these issues. So Jessica Watkins was arrested in January after she turned herself in to federal authorities and was charged with conspiracy, entering and remaining in a restricted building or grounds, or other charges. She has not been out of pretrial detention for 9 months. She didn't kill anybody. She didn't injure anybody. But Black Lives Matter did, and they did nothing. Arson, they committed robbery, they looted, they stole weapons, they stole ammunition as seen on video. They beat up elderly people trying to protect their businesses. They attacked police, they set a couple police officers on fire. They, all seen on video, they attacked drivers, they stopped traffic, they did whatever they wanted to do. And the Democrats did nothing. They said it was a peaceful protest, as did MSM and social media. So anyone who said anything different was a racist. So if you thought the American system wasn't working before, it definitely is not working today. So Jessica Watkins is a former Army Ranger and a veteran of the Afghanistan War, attended the January 6th protest and rally. I didn't see it as a protest. I saw it as a rally and a march. So you have to be careful with the words as well in the media. And you have to be able to do your own homework and your own research and not believe me or any other talk show host or anyone else, and do your own homework and your own research. Come to your own informed decisions. Thank God we do have a jury system, and thank God we do have due process of law, but that doesn't always work either. So going back to justices for sale, if you are among the very wealthy, you can afford to buy high-powered lawyers to protect you, keep the cases continued, and do whatever is necessary to be done and to advise you on how to stay free or settle the case out of court and dismiss it. But if you are the middle class, you can get by some justice. And depending on if you own a home, if you have stocks, if you own valuable jewelry, gold, silver, cars, if you have a bank account, you have savings, CDs, whatever assets you have, then you can buy some justice. But when you run out of money, sometimes your attorney runs out as well and leaves you hanging in the middle of your case. These are true statements, and this happens, and it's been happening for decades. So judges don't like so much people to represent themselves in court because they are required to protect their constitutional rights, although they cannot give them legal advice, the litigants in pro per. They prefer to deal with the lawyers. So that's the middle class. You can buy some justice, but you may not be able to buy just you need to be set free. So what happens many times is then you have the poor people. Well, they don't have any money to buy any justice, so they try to get pro bono lawyers or public defenders. And so everyone is like a number. You're not really a human being. You're a number because so many of them have been doing this legal work for so long that sometimes they see you as a seamless assembly line of numbers who, if you have no money or you've run out of money, then you can plea bargain. They'll talk you into plea bargaining rather than have to go to all the work of setting up the everything that is needed to hold a trial, especially a trial by jury. So then you are then more than likely going to plead guilty, even if you're 100% innocent, because you'll probably be offered, you plead guilty, you get to go home, you just do some community service, you pay the fine, or you spend a little time in jail, whatever it is that you plea bargain to, now you plea bargain to being guilty. So now you have a criminal record, even if you're 100% innocent. So when I see cases like this, it does pique my attention, which it has for 30 years, probably before that, because even as a child, I did not like injustices. And so here we have, it says, during the siege of the U.S. Capitol, Jessica Watkins did not threaten anyone, did not vandalize anything, did not encourage anyone to do any vandalizing. She spoke with several police officers inside the Capitol and followed their orders. Now, what is interesting about this to me is that the difference between the people who entered the state Capitol, which is a public building taxpayer funded by the people, did not have the necessary protection for a president of the United States holding a march, or the members of Congress inside the Capitol building. How could that happen? Cation. If you try to go into a government building or a courthouse, my God, you have to go through the X-ray machine, and yet they go through all your or they do an X-ray examination of all your valuables inside your purse or your briefcase or whatever you're carrying. So how is it that the state capitol in Washington, D.C. did not have proper security, knowing that there were going to be a large number of people coming to rally and march that day with the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, and also to protect the people inside the state capitol holding hearings. And why didn't they vet the people who were coming towards the Capitol building and tell them to go back? From the videos, it appears they were telling them to come in. Why didn't they shut the doors? I mean, there's so many different facts to this, and wasn't the Speaker of the House responsible to make sure that there was ample security to prevent any problems? So as noted, Ms. Watkins has no history of violence and no prior convictions. She did not use any force or violence or threaten any person in the Capitol or on the Capitol grounds on January 6, 2021. She did not vandalize anything in the Capitol or engage in any destruction of property, and in fact, encourage others not to vandalize. She did not search for members of Congress. She did not harass any police officers, but spoke with police officers and followed their orders. She participated in medical rescue operations for injured people during the event. So the Gateway Pundit previously reported that Jessica Watkins was stripped and left naked in a jail cell for 4 days with the lights on 24 hours a day for her alleged crimes of conspiring to attack the United States Capitol building on January 6. Watkins shared her official testimony with the Gateway Pundit, and here is the excerpt. Now, how does that help improve justice to strip a young girl naked, if that is true? I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm just reading these excerpts online. But if that is true, that is cruel and unusual punishment, in my opinion. January 6 is akin to a Swiss Army knife, the article says, a barely effective tool that has served many purposes to the Democrat Party. Each function has found itself a niche to use with the narrative spun by those who seek only to remain in power. Why are people in office for 30, 40 plus years instead of retiring at least 72, but remaining in office into their 90s? Why does everybody else have to retire except them? So anyway, the first purpose of January 6 has served as its primary function to silence the opposition and instill fear of retribution by law enforcement for speaking out against the party and to slander conservatives as racist, terrorists, and insurrectionists, according to this article on Gateway Pundit. It says the second purpose of January 6 is to solidify the notion that the 2020 election was devoid of fraud. And the third is to secure funding for or to expand federal law enforcement. Now, I don't think they want to expand the police in states or the sheriffs, because it's the left who's calling to defund the police, including the squad and BLM and everyone on the left. On the right, they're asking to fund the police, and they do fund the police and support the police. It would be insane to defund the police and the sheriff and ICE and Border Patrol, tie their hands at the borders. Well, we know what a crisis they have caused. And that's been going on since 2009. So This is the difference in having money and not having money, in having connections and not having connections, and how young people and older people as well should learn more about the legal system and how the system doesn't work for everyone. It is not justice for all. It is justice, as chapter 10 says in my book, justice for some, S-U-M with the dollar sign, and some, S-O-M-E. And so this young girl, I believe, has suffered far beyond what is necessary. She should have just got, if anything, a plea bargain for community service. But then that's just my opinion as a talk show host, as those on the left spew their opinions as talk show hosts. If it was their daughter or their sister or their loved one, they would not be spewing this information that everyone who is at the Capitol is a domestic terrorist or racist or white supremacist. That is not true. That is throwing people into one big pot and judging them without due process of law and without a trial, and that is very dangerous. And there's another issue here that I think is really important. Going to COVID, the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine. 15-year-old Germany girl, Cheyenne Braun, 15 years old, died 3 weeks after receiving the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. This investigation was launched. And this was in Hallfeld, Germany. The police are investigating the case of a 15-year-old girl who died several weeks after her COVID-19 jab, reports the local news outlet Mainwell. Cheyenne Braun suffered a cardiac arrest just days after the vaccine and was rushed to intensive care and put on a ventilator before dying on Tuesday, November 16th. Well, there have been many medical people who have stated that they should not be put on a ventilator. They should be given treatments that doctors who are credentialed and licensed use to cure COVID patients, but aren't allowed on the protocol in these hospitals and nursing homes. So moving on here, German study finds zero COVID, 19 deaths in healthy children, but the children are now dying from the vaccine. By Brian Schilhavy, the Health Impact News, a new study published in Germany looked at risk of hospitalization, severe disease, and mortality due to COVID-19 in children. Their results found very little risk among the children for serious events or deaths. While the overall hospitalization rate associated with SARS-CoV-2 infections was 35.9 to 10,000 children, ICU admission rate was 1.7 per 10,000, and case fatality was 0.09 per 10,000. However, when they looked at comorbidities, they could not find a single case where a healthy child in the 5 to 11 years old age group died from SARS-CoV-2 infection. Children without comorbidities were found to be significantly less likely to suffer from a severe or fatal disease course. The lowest risk was observed in children aged 5 to 11 without comorbidities. And in this group, the ICU admission, the admission rate was 0.2 per 10,000, and case fatality could not be calculated due to the absence of cases. Unlike the U.S. and Israel, where this age group is now being injected with Pfizer COVID-19 shots, this age group has not been approved for COVID-19 shots in Germany yet, although there appear to be plans in place to start this soon. We've already reported on two deaths of children in Germany following the COVID-19 shots, and a 12-year-old boy, as well as the 15-year-old girl, who were reported to have died after the COVID shots. This is getting really, really ridiculous that they are not looking into these deaths involving young people in America and in Europe and in Canada. And it's reckless and irresponsible. And so this leads me to Facebook sued for $150 billion accused of causing genocide. And that's by the Associated Press. Rohingya refugees sued Facebook parent Meta Platforms for more than $150 billion over what they say was the company's failure to stop hateful posts that incited violence against the Muslim ethnic group by Myanmar's military rulers and their supporters. Lawyers filed a class action lawsuit Monday in California saying Facebook's arrival in Myanmar helped spread. Hold on, this thing keeps jumping for some reason. Helped spread hate speech, misinformation, and incitement to violence that amounted to a substantial cause and eventual perpetuation of the Rohingya genocide. Lawyers in the United Kingdom have issued notice of their intention to file a single legal action. Facebook, which was recently renamed Meta, did not immediately reply to a request for comment. It's the latest in a series of accusations that the social media giant fueled misinformation and political violence outlined in redacted internal documents obtained by a consortium of news organizations, including the Associated Press. The combined legal claims from Rohingya refugees are being filed on behalf of anyone worldwide who survived the violence or had a relative who died from it. The Rohingya are a Muslim ethnic group forced to flee persecution and violence in Myanmar starting in 2017, with an estimated 1 million living in refugee camps in neighboring Bangladesh. Some 10,000 have ended up in the United States of America. In 2018, United Nations human rights experts investigating attacks against the Rohingya said Facebook had played a role in spreading hate speech. More than 10,000 Rohingya have been killed, and more than 150,000 were subject to physical violence, according to the law firms organizing the cases. The lawsuits say Facebook's algorithms amplified hate speech against the Rohingya people and that it didn't spend enough money to hire moderators and fact checkers who spoke to the local languages or who spoke the local languages or understood the political situation. They also say Facebook failed to shut accounts and pages or take down posts inciting violence or using hate speech directed in the ethnic group. Well, what's interesting to me is that Facebook has accused many, many people on the right, conservatives, the president of the United States, myself, and many of my longtime Facebook friends, as I was on Facebook for 12 years. And after COVID hit, and I questioned Dr. Fauci and the mask and the experimental and trial injections, being used on human beings, which is and using human beings as a as human lab rats, which is a Nuremberg Code violation and human rights violations, and violates our constitutional right not to be enslaved by Dr. Fauci, CDC, WHO, the Democrats, the White House, and Bill Gates, and Big Pharma, and so forth. And according to their fact checkers, anyone who questioned anything about what these people were doing who are invested in Big Pharma and the FDA experimental and trial injections was suspended, accused of hate speech, misinformation, and even one graph that I posted about about the FDA-approved experimental and trial injections. I was accused of sexual exploitation abuse. I don't know how, and if the guy or woman was on drugs or what, but it was far from that accusation. So anyway, this is where we're at with our nation and the world, where they are using FDA-approved experimental and trial injections when all the animals died who were injected two times with these jabs. Then they went directly to their built-in customer base using fear-mongering, coercion, and threats that we will fire you from your jobs. You will not be able to shop in markets and buy food. We will starve you to death. We will fire you from your jobs. You will lose your family, your homes, and everything else you own, because they say we will own everything and you will own nothing. These are cruel and unusual punishments against people who end up with a flu that has cures, according to credentialed and licensed doctors, tens and tens of thousands, if not millions, internationally. And those cures have been suppressed since 2019, and especially since 2021. While the United Nations Agenda 2021 began in 2021, Gates ID 2021 vaccine passport began in 2021 to be implemented, which overthrows the United States Constitution. Depopulation of 2021 is to be at 50% by 2030, according to the New World Order's United Nations Sustainable Development Program that began in 2021. And the reset was to begin in 2021. And COVID-19 was the catalyst. And COVID-19 began in 2019. So all the pieces of the puzzle are there. You just have to start looking for them. Because this is a matter of what doctors and scientists say could be a potential suicide 1 or 2 or 3 years down the road. There are no short and long-term case studies approved for FDA approval of a licensed vaccine because it takes 5 to 25 years or more to approve and license a vaccine. So this is warp speed, using every human being on the planet as a built-in customer base, as human commodities for human capital, for their profit with no liability. If you die, your loved ones die, or are injured for life because kids are falling dead or injured on the fields of the football fields, the baseball fields, the soccer fields, you name it, in Europe, America, and Canada. And no one's paying attention. It's all being ignored and saying it had nothing to do with the jabs. These are healthy babies, healthy children, healthy young people, and not all old people have a weak immune system or pre-existing conditions. But after jabbed, it's reported many thousands, tens of thousands, have been suffering from brain injuries, heart attacks, strokes, Guillain-Barre syndrome, and more. And the FDA has a list, and so does Dr. Fauci, have a list prior to the 2021 injections, potential serious direct adverse health effects to individual human beings. So the FDA experimental and trial injections were in the past not allowed without willing volunteers, and usually they were paid, to agree to join in an experiment and trial vaccine or unlicensed vaccine or prescription drug or some sort of treatment. And they must be informed of everything that is in the trial and experimental unlicensed vaccine or prescription drug or treatment. And they must be informed of the risk, and they must also, the doctors who are performing these experiments must have a written consent of sound mind. People in nursing homes and hospitals who are elderly and have dementia, have Alzheimer's, or on medications, obviously cannot make sound decisions. And one more thing before I close. The FDA experimental and trial treatments was intended for people who were very ill, ran out of options. Doctors ran out of options for their patients to save their lives, and those patients agreed to be the human lab rats after informed of the risk and what's in the treatment and what will happen or possibly happen, whether they could be temporarily or permanently injured or die, and they had to have a signed consent form. It was not intended to use fear mongering, coercion, and threats on the world's population to use everyone as a built-in customer base, as human lab rats under their microscope to be traced and tracked and spied upon by Bill Gates, BioNTech, Mologic, Pfizer, and AI, 5G, and all involved in making billions and billions of dollars off of human commodities for human capital. And in 2022, Dr. Fauci said they're coming for your babies to be injected. Not just the toddlers and the teenagers and the young people. It started with the elderly. Now they're down to the babies. Your babies. So God bless you. God bless America. I hope that made sense to you. I hope you do your own homework, your own research, and come to your own informed decisions. This is the Rose saying, talk to you next Wednesday with a very special author or expert.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.